Movie Break is here. I am at DOP Leipzig and it's the fourth day of the festival. It's Thursday now and I'm here with the first interview from the festival. I'm talking to director Deborah Granik. She's here with me now. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
And she brought a series, DOP Leipzig. It's 5 episodes of each is about like 1 hour approximately. And I saw them all together as one like super long film. And that's also how we see them here at the festival. Was it always meant to be a series or did you intend it to be a film originally?
It has gone through many conceptual ideas. The fact that it was that the filming took place over so many years made it logical that it needed to be in parts. That it was very hard to boil this down to just a feature-length film, given that it was going to chronicle a decade. And then at one point, it seemed like when something's in parts, the most logical location now is streaming it. It's not very commercial in the sense that it's a compelling story, but it does not have the grammar and the syntax of what is now kind of ubiquitously streamed, right? It doesn't have these sort of mandatory markers in it that tell you big score, cliffhangers. You know, it's much more about life as lived in a particular neighborhood in New York over the course of a decade. It's chapters. It's more like a novel. But chapters also lend themselves to be able to see them in parts. Watching an audience work so hard to sit through a very long, immersive experience, my brain is churning. How could I help? How can I break it up? What would help an audience? Can they see it over 5 nights? Could they see part 1 and part 2 and then come back and see 3 and 4? It's remaining a little puzzle about the easiest way to share this work, you know?
The title is Conbody versus Everybody. Now, Conbody for once could be seen as naming the main character who has been incarcerated. A Conbody could also be seen as referring to the part of or the segment of population in the U.S. and it's a continuously growing part of the population that has been incarcerated. So Conbody versus Everybody. So everybody, would you say that's the society or is it the system?
I think if I was thinking along with costs, I think it's the system. First, it sounds so adversarial. It's not when your little family has something in common, when you've been rejected, you know, by society or been a pariah or been considered a criminal or an outcast or a poor person. You know, you need to find a family. You need to find comrades. And then sometimes you feel like it's us against the world. You know, it's not about being against all people or the system, for sure. It's like, we need to be strong. We need to be connected so that we can push back against this system that is very interested in our bodies, are having us be part, you know, that's a system that is really been designed to scoop up and manage, like you just said, a significant margin of U.S. people.
We should also mention that the people who are incarcerated are an almost unpaid or severely underpaid workforce. So if you took this workforce away, then it would be a significant economical damage to the U.S. actually. So they kind of rely on those incarcerated people who do underpaid work. So how did you meet him?
I met him because I was trying to do research on what reentry is like. What are the steps that are needed for someone to succeed when they come home from prison? You know, what does a person need the most? And he was trying to figure this out for himself. And he was in a program. And I was visiting that program just as part of the sort of research, trying to look, how will I ever find someone that might want to talk about this? Who can give first-person knowledge? He said yes. I asked him point blank. I said, could we have a conversation about this? You're going through this. You are living it. I have a skill set, which is to record. I have a skill set, which is to try to bear witness or make projects that depict a particular experience. You have the experience. I have the camera. Could we have a meaningful conversation?
The main character has the idea of building a fitness studio that then becomes very successful. And this fitness studio, actually, it's also called Conbody, and it's managed by people who are all formerly incarcerated people. It's like in the middle of New York, so it makes pop-ups in very posh areas even. So I was wondering, like, this idea sounds great, but how did he pay for it? How did he get the funding? How did he even realize it?
He's just using these rented rooms. It opens in a rented room, and then he rents another room at a place that actually will not allow him to continue there because they get scared. This is a liability. He has to just constantly fundraise or do kind of competitions and pitches. It was when he first came out of prison, it was the startup era. There was this new kind of myth, a new, I would say, maybe American myth that was kind of being resuscitated, which was, if you've got an idea, go pitch it. Money will back you. There'll be investors. This is the time. There are no more bars to success. Compete. It was also, strangely, a fitness craze. It's the same years was these gyms were called boutique fitness gyms. One of them would be boxing. One of them would be sweating and dancing. One would be lifting weights only. One would be cycling like a maniac on a stationary bicycle. You know, some of them would be, and cost is like, wow. One of the things we learn in prison to save our mental stability is we learn how to do these exercises so that we can create endorphins, so that we can stay pretty much stable, so we stay strong, especially if you've got a long sentence.
It's even a cliche, like it's in every jail movie that we can think of. It's like the scene where the guy does like sit-ups and
absolutely, but there's a reason. There's a heritage. There's a culture behind it. But then in prison, there's also a culture of camaraderie where you inspire your other people. You're like, you can do that. You got 10 more. Do it. 10. You've got 10. There's this one that I always love. We don't have too much of it in the film, but where people are doing push-ups, but then they put their hand out and they touch the hand of the person across from them. So there's some contact, you know, and some assistance. And so he's like, we have a skill set. Let me try to see if I could join this marketplace of fitness. It worked in his mind. He's like, as he's branding himself, I've come back and I'm selling something healthy. I used to sell something that made people sick often, right? You know, drugs don't work out for a lot of people. I'm going to come back this time with a public health plus. Then he was also in this program that was very, the idea, transform your hustle. The reason you were incarcerated was because what you were selling was illegal, but you're a good entrepreneur. You're a hustler. You move yourself hard in order to make money. Transform your hustle. Go from illegal to legal.
You spend a very long time, both in terms of months and years with your main character, but also in all the hours in the day. So how close did you get and how was it actually to part after such a time? And when did you know that the documentary was over? Now I got what I wanted and this is it. This is the story.
You know, of course, we did lose people along the way. Some people did not make it. Some people were harmed. Some people lost very important members of their family. You know, in a story where mostly everyone's still going forward, the only mental place I knew where to, you know, how to say pause this is the story is still being written and we only told one chapter. He's going to have another decade and another decade. We could tell one of these chapters, the first novel, and maybe he's writing a second as his life goes. It's not like you know where to pause, but you have to be able to say at some point, this collection of footage, this much footage will become unmanageable. It will overwhelm us and almost at risk. Of course, in a filmmaker's life too, you have to stop because you do have other stories in your mind and other subject matters that are drawing you very strongly. But I did become close. I think Koss and I think Koss would say we became close. If you spend a decade with someone, closeness is inevitable, you know.
In the end of the documentary, we see this fitness center become very, very successful, and there also have been like articles in many magazines, not only film magazines and fitness, independent fitness magazines writing about this. So it's really a little boom. Do you think the film helped it or did this already happen before it actually, the film got out?
Oh, it happened before the film got out. And in fact, Koss would always say to me, oh my God, this is taking so long. It can't even help us. And at one point that was touchy. You know, it's like, can it do anything for us? But he also understood this wasn't about...
It's not an advertising campaign.
Exactly,
it's a documentary.
Exactly. He knew it was, the core was about reentry to civilian society after you've been in prison. What do you need? And what does the mainstream society need to do to make sure that you can reenter? It's two ways. The receiving society also has to say, I want to have this conversation. I want to work with you. I want to hire you. I want to be an ally.
As much as I love to see that main character succeed. And I think everybody will love to see them succeed. But is it also a risk that you give this idea that you say like, oh, you can make it. You just have to work hard and try out. And then people lean back and say like, look, it's possible. And this is the thing that most people cannot make it because there's so much that on it, which it depends, like luck, opportunities, your personal situation, health things and all that, family, friends. So a lot of things have to click together to create a success story like that. And if it's always these success stories that are sold or that are presented, and this often, I think, creates a misleading image, the image that in the end, then, oh, it is the fault of the person that stays poor or that goes back to jail or whatever, or that doesn't get healthy. You just have to try hard and you didn't try hard enough. Did you think about that? Or?
Oh, God, every single day. I mean, because one of the scariest things that the sociology, you know, and people really study this, who does stay out of prison? Who does find a second chance? Who does get to rebuild their life? One of the key predictors can indicate whether someone's going to find success or be able to survive the very hard process of coming back to society is the ability to withstand setbacks. It's not that you're a wunderkind. It's not that you're the smartest person, that you have advantages over other people. If it partly is neurochemical, but it is the ability to withstand very hard things happening and not be crushed by them. So few of us can withstand setbacks and not be crushed by them. Koss does withstand setbacks in a way that is, I would say, I agree with you, exceptional. But what he can do is to at least validate someone and say, hey, inside, you were a good trainer. Watch me, be with me, be on this team and see how, learn to talk to people that are very different than yourself. He's about skill building, knowing it's not easy. So he would never say that someone's poverty is their own fault. What he would say is we need so many more opportunities for people to get what they need to acquire the social capital to proceed. I don't feel in the film that he presents himself in a sort of all sewn up kind of way, like this is the recipe and it's going to work for everyone. I think when he goes inside prisons, you know, he cares a lot about people who are still inside. I think he sees his role as providing some motivation. Hey, some things can come from a small idea. I would say that American stories are even at greater risk of doing what you're talking about, right? That we have a celebrity culture, celebrity gazing culture, and the idea of the special person, the fact that none of this comes easy for him, that it was brick by brick. He took a lot of risks and nothing was really given to him.
You have been presenting this film to a number of audiences at festivals. How did you perceive their reaction to it?
This is the first time it's ever been shown in its entirety. Yesterday's experience was extremely interesting for me. You know, I worried about retention, about retaining so many scenes over such a long period of time. You know, I was so curious to talk today to someone like, what do you even remember? Does it all just swirl together or do you remember, you know, individual scenes when you've seen that many scenes? I got a couple wonderful insights from the Leipzig audience. I really appreciated some things that they appreciated. And I need to hear from audiences. I want to know. I've gotten individual letters and emails from people. When you make something long, who doesn't want to hear the word, I got hooked, right? I was hooked in the story. And so when I've heard that, I'm like, oh my goodness, it means so much to me because I want people to be hooked on everyday life. You know, I want people to find the life of ordinary people to be of interest. Someone could say, okay, well, Koss is not ordinary, but many days he's very ordinary. He's cleaning his own business. He's helping his mom. He's being a dad to his son. He's trying to help his brother get elected or be a support to his brother who's taking such a different path. The feedback that I would continue to love to hear, of course, would make me feel whole and good about this project is that it sustained people's interest, the journey of this decade and in this group's life, you know.
Well, I can certainly say for me that it did, but now that you worked so long on this project, do you already have a new project you're working on? And are you going to stay in documentary? Are you going to go back to feature films or doing series or fiction films?
The next project I'm doing it's a fiction film, but curiously enough, it's from nonfiction material. Its origins are, again, a sociological, deep investigation about how working life is changing in the technology era, the digital capitalism, surveillance capitalism, gig capitalism. You know, the digital era brought an abrupt shift for almost most of the world's working people. This is kind of a small, intimate story about one group of those people in a very post-industrial city in way up in the north of New York State near the Canadian border. And it's a story of all the resources they're trying to find inside themselves to make it work, to survive this, because it feels like a big rug pull, like to have every agreement that you thought the economy and your country was going to make with you as a working person altered.
So this sounds certainly very interesting. Conbody vs. Everybody is now here at DOC Leipzig. And if you miss it, you can see it still in streaming. It is at...
It is going to be in the States. It will be on a wonderful streamer that takes a lot of risks with non-conforming work, which is called the Criterion Channel. And I would love to find, it would be my greatest hope to find like the European counterpart, you know, like a streamer in Europe that takes non-conforming non-fiction work, you know.
So maybe not Amazon Prime or Mubi, but correct. Look out for it. Yeah. And I say goodbye and thank you to Deborah Granik.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being interested.